we were going to talk about cyber attacks, like give a couple a couple of specific ones and why they're so damn prevalent and popular and why they're even becoming more talked about by, you know, the media, who has no business talking about them because they're fucking idiots.
Right.
In general, cyber attacks, anyone that's listening, I'm sure you've heard them, you know, especially right now, the Russia and Ukraine situation. Russia's got, I think, Ukraine completely surrounded at this point, or damn near close to it. And, Jesus. You know, they've got this big military threat on the borders, like actual troops, you know, troops, vehicles, stuff like that. But there have been several coordinated attacks against the infrastructure of Ukraine, their power infrastructure, government offices, utilities in general. Those are always the big ones you go after, right? If you just you disrupt utilities, power, water, whatever, you disrupt the population. And that not only makes them weaker, but it puts pressure on the government to give in to your demands because their population's like, what the fuck, dude? What are you doing? You're supposed to protect us. Yeah, give us power back. So it's become more and more popular. I do techie sysadmin-y stuff for my job, and there was a really big one for anyone else that does that or is tangentially related to it. There's a really big one this over Christmas, the Log4j exploit.
I'll just say, and even if you don't do it, it's the likelihood of it affecting any software that you use is high.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. This one was particularly nasty. So there's a lot of people probably will understand at least a little bit of what open source software is. The name gets misused like every term ever. People kind of use it inappropriately, but Log4j is an open source logging library. There's this software foundation called Apache. They do a lot of different stuff, have a lot of different really cool applications. This is one of them. That's not an application, it's a library, but either way, it's a I've never used it because I'm not a developer, but it's apparently very flexible, really powerful. It's open source and free, so a lot of people gravitate towards it, obviously. And you can just kind of integrate it with your Java application or even a non-Java application and use it to spit logs out, which is great because in general, when you're developing, the less code you have to write, you know, why reinvent the wheel? Unless you have a reason to. If someone else already has a framework or a library, use it because that's less work on you and they've already vetted it. They've already tested it, allegedly. Just use it and plug it in. There's always a debate in the tech world, especially at the enterprise levels, like big companies, of whether it's better to use something you pay for and it's closed source, so it's proprietary, code is hidden, or open source, it's free, but the community supports it. And you can make the argument either way. It's open source. The argument can be made that the more people look at something, security holes are found quicker and the product develops faster, which can be true. You have a community of some of the smartest people that are doing something, but they're doing it in their spare time. So if you need something done in general in their spare time, so if you need something done, you don't have a throat to strangle is like the phrase, right? Like you can't be like, hey, fix this for me right now. Cause right. It could be a college student or it could be a 30-year-old professional. You have no idea like who the guy is behind it. They're like, fuck
you. No warranty, no guarantees.
Yep.
It's just given freely.
But that's the downside to it. Upside again is more people and you can see the code yourself. It's out there. It's on GitHub. It's wherever. You can look at it. You can audit it. You can make changes to it as long as, depending on the license, as long as you publish your changes, you can do whatever you want. And you compare that to buying something from Microsoft. You can't make changes to it. You don't see the code. But Microsoft, assuming you have a contract with them and get support, you have that throat to strangle. Like, it breaks, you can say, look, fucking fix this. I pay you X millions of dollars, and they'll probably fix it. So that tangent aside, Log4j, like D said, is everywhere. Like, it's in like a smaller, not embedded devices, but mobile devices. It's in TVs, even. So I guess that is a type of embedded device. It's in enterprise applications the world over, banking, power utilities, commerce. It's fucking everywhere.
Healthcare,
yeah, another great example. Like, chances are many somethings you've used have used this library. And it's not at a level you would notice it. It's logging. It's for the app developers or it's for the admins, but it's there. And there was a vulnerability found that allowed, I'm not really going to go into details. You can Google Log4Shell if you want to see it, if you care. But there's an interface called a JNDI interface that lets you call allows you to access or call a resource. And there was a vulnerability found that you could actually input arbitrary strings, and it would accept it as though you were trying to call a resource. You could get it to execute anything you put in that JNDI call, which is a big deal. Like, if you haven't heard of this somehow, but you're into security and you're listening, you're already, I'm sure your mouth's on the floor. You're like, what the fuck? Because it's unauthenticated. There's no protection around it. And you have remote code execution just by hitting this available interface. It's like a wet dream, honestly, yeah.
It's like a nighttime television level meme. You know, I'm in and now I can do anything on your system that I want.
It is trivial, but just to kind of
break it down to, you know, my level, and for the audience too. So basically, this log4j is a logger. So what it does is anything that happens within the software, or anything happening in the software, any kind of events or stuff like that, it can write a message out to this log, which is like a basically a list of actions that take place. It's a record of everything that's taking place, right? And you can it can be as verbose, or it can be as sparse as you want it to. Within reasons, there are some things that I believe it logs just, you know, because that's the way it's set up, and I don't know if you can change it. Anyways. So what's happening is basically, people are able to, create these log messages on your system or software. I'm sorry. And they are inserting code or commands into those messages that will then allow them to infiltrate that software and your system.
Yep. So, it's nasty. It does what you said, but it even takes it a step farther, because that's correct. It's a good way to think about it, and it's probably a better example that I'm about to give. But log4j, while, you know, like you said, it logs things, right? And it's flexible. Like I was saying earlier, you can make it. It has an interface to it. It's called an API, but it has an interface where you can kind of customize it and get it to spit out things that you want. And one of the things, what allows this vulnerability to happen is one of the things you can have log4j do is it can expand things within it. It can take in a string and expand it and actually call code on it to give you a result. So it can kind of, like, you basically, you think of it, if this doesn't make sense, you're asking it a question, it does something internally and gives you an answer back. And one of the things you can do is the JNDI thing I mentioned earlier, you can do a lookup and you can give it a URL. So like the web interface, you go to www.google.com. That's URL. It's a contrived example, but same thing. You can pass that to log4j, and you could have stood up on your end a malicious hacker man server where it doesn't matter where it is. There's no sanitization done. There's no checking done. And you pass your own URL, whatever it is, to a system that's vulnerable, and log4j will take it and it will actually execute it as privileged code. That's the kicker. A lot of things that When you try to take control of a system, you have to find out a way to become like the admin user or to get privileges you don't have. With log4j, this exploit, you don't have to do that, because you can just pass this message in and log4j executes it with the privileges it has for you. And you can have it execute arbitrary URLs and it just runs code natively in it. And that's, I think I'm pretty knowledgeable on the subject, but this is where I go, how the fuck did this get ignored? Because this is old. This is not new, right? This is not old. A new library, and this is not new functionality. This has been there for, I think, 11 years, someone said. So there's a timeline. There's a timeline you can find. And I think the functionality I'm talking about, where it expands a URL, came out in like 2011 or so. It's been there for a long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so it was in... So if it was in 2011, that would have been on log4j1, and they switched over to log4j2 in 2015. log4j1 was at end of life in 2015.
So 2.1 is the affected, the worst one.
Maybe I'm thinking of the wrong. I'll backtrack and not say 12 years or 11 years, whatever. I'll say several years. I know for sure. I wish I had that up in front of me.
It's been out there long enough, and the from what I've been reading anyways, the folks that have been investigating this are saying that it's not hard to do.
I don't know how it's
gone undetected.
Well, that's kind of the weird thing. And I wanted to talk about that too. I mean, I know this is a really technical example. It's a big name and it's recently happened. It's actually still, mitigations are still going on. Companies are still trying to fix products, because one of the things that, when I talk to people about this, like friends or coworkers, even that maybe don't, you know, find it as interesting as me, what they don't realize is that once people find a big, like, attack vector, it's another way you can call this or think of it, like something that is installed everywhere or that's used everywhere. Because if you're, you know, evil hacker man for whatever government, you don't, unless you have a very specific purpose, you don't really want to target something that only runs on 100 devices. You want to find something that runs on millions of devices.
Yeah.
And this is everywhere. So once, what people don't realize at first until, you know, you tell them and they think about it, is once you find, they're not going to stop. Like, yeah, maybe you fix this vulnerability, but keep in mind, it's been there for years and no one's found it until now. But now they know that there are big vulnerabilities that are trivial to exploit in this product that is everywhere. And they're not going to stop. And this was, I mean, this Log4Shell, which is the name of the, I love how there was always goofy exploit names. It's fucking awesome. But they found this initial exploit and it was patched by a lot of companies within a couple of days, but they had to release several patches because when the company would fix it, because it was getting so much publicity and all these groups were trying to target it, they would find new vulnerabilities because they're still poking at it. Again, they're not just going to give up. They're not going to say, oh, you fixed it. Okay, well, I'm done. No. They're going to look to see it, because your fix, you know, in software development, it's complicated. Everything you do, you can introduce new bugs when you're trying to fix something. And like the first patch for this introduced a new bug that lets you do a denial of service attack. So now you could no longer, you know, maybe steal information, but you could just shut systems down. I'm simplifying, but you could take systems offline. And that's a brand new bug that was just introduced trying to fix this one. So it's insanely complicated, and it's a huge market. You can make a lot of money doing this. You don't even have to work for a government. I mean, that's what TV shows, right? Like people like hacking for the CIA, and sure, that exists. But the private sector is huge in this, and you can make a fuck ton of money. So it's nuts. I know I'm talking, I'm really passionate about the subject. It's insane. Just the scope, and the people out there they're smart, and there's sometimes people want to believe that bad guys are stupid or bad guys will always get caught or what. Now there are some very fucking smart people, and they don't look at themselves as being bad, but they
cause bad things to happen.
Yeah.
I think the denial of service attacks are the ones that are more, more well known to the public, to the general public.
It's such a dick move.
Well, it is, because they target to, like, you know, convenient services, right? Like, sure, denial of services are used for nefarious, like, I don't know, utility things. But, like, you know, it seems like every other day Twitch has a problem. Or Netflix or Amazon has been under, Amazon owns Twitch, but like, so you're trying to watch your favorite streamer and it goes offline and you go to Twitter and Twitch is like, we're sorry, we're having a denial of service attack. And c'est la vie.
Yeah. It feels like, I wonder sometimes, you know, how much of it's just corporate espionage, right? It's companies paying, you know, somebody to fuck up this other company and, you know, damage their reputation by, you know, bringing them down at the same time every day or every other day and causing the same problem over and over, you know, generate a pattern, you know, hurt their image, you know, it's unreliable, et cetera, et cetera. Once you come over here to us, you know, our service is better. It doesn't have that problem. You know,
if it was me, what I would do is, okay, so here's my step-by-step plan for becoming, you know, the millionaire, right?
All
so
right.
I'm going to get a job working for Reddit, and I'm going to first, you know, crawl my way up through the ranks and get in a position where I am, I have the control, or at least I have an input into any kind of security software that is purchased. And I'm going to talk to some, you know, security folks and whoever's trying to sell us something, and I'll say, hey, if you give me $1 million, we'll buy your product. And they'll be like, well, how are you going to get ready to buy our product? And that's when I reach out to these, you know, hackers, and I'll get them to do a denial of service attack on my own company that I work for, bring down the system. And then I'll be like, all right, guys, I told you, if we don't get the software right now, like, we're going to be out of a job, and fuck you.
You know, I know you're like half joking, but I wonder if people have tried that.
Oh man, I'm sure.
No, they have. You know they did. Sure.
You know, it's interesting. You think of like, so I don't think inside this is true. Man. So full disclaimer, I do not believe. I think this is a pretty weak conspiracy theory, but it plays into it, so I'm going to say it anyways. There's a company called Cloudflare, and they do networking stuff. Yeah. And one of the things they specialize in is preventing denial of service attacks. That's like, they have this. Like, and it's good. Don't get me wrong. It's like they have this secret sauce combination of hardware they've literally made from scratch and developed, and software, and they're very good at what they do. They're becoming very ubiquitous too. Like, big players use them: Netflix, Google, Facebook. A lot of big companies that have traditionally kind of kept a lot of networking internal are going through Cloudflare now.
I didn't know so they were that big.
So, yeah, they're fucking, dude. They're fucking gigantic.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep.
Big.
And one of the things, again, I do not believe this, but it's funny, is people think that Cloudflare is actually behind a lot of the people doing the coordinated either just denial of service or distributed denial of service that have, because there's a huge uptick over the last couple of years, and it kind of lines up with them getting bigger, but it's still a funny, you know, it's a funny conspiracy theory that they're kind of leading this charge and to get people to use their product and to use their hardware.
It makes perfect fucking sense.
I've thought forever, like, Symantec, they got a whole wing. All those dudes do is make viruses. That's all they do. I'm convinced of that, and there's no one that can convince me otherwise. All these antivirus companies and anti-malware, they got a whole wing. All they do is make that shit. They just cranking it out. They'll change it a little bit because they know what the signatures are, how it works a little bit. They'll change it a little bit, reintroduce it. Change a little bit, reintroduce it. They just keep doing it. To keep doing it so they can sell you a vaccine. I mean, a antibiotic.
Oh God.
Maybe. I know it makes sense, and I'm probably just being naive, but I think the biggest reason why I think I'm not convinced that happens, both at, you know, Cloudflare, my example, or your example, is because it would be so trivial for them to be caught and outed.
You would think.
Because people talk. Well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, once you do any illegal shit like that, it's, you know, you're rife. You're ripe for getting blackmailed, right?
Right.
You know, yeah. No, I know you're doing something, and I'm going to take you down unless you pay me my $1 million.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Maybe it does happen, though. There is a rise, though. So I kind of took us on a tangent, I'm sorry. Back to the denial of service thing, one reason that's so annoying is because we're talking about trivial, right? Like, some, again, I'm using broad sweeping terms, so if you are listening, don't make fun of me. There are things that are very hard to do, and there are things that are very easy to do, and then there's a spectrum, right? Same as anything else. Mm-hmm. In general, doing a denial of service isn't hard. You can literally rent botnets or rent just compute power from companies. They openly sell it, and you can just rent it and put a URL in it, or put IP addresses or host names, and they would just use it. Now, will it work? Maybe not, because companies use Cloudflare. They use other companies that know how to mitigate denial of service. It's getting harder. It's getting harder to make it as effective, but it's very easy to do. You don't need any knowledge even, because you can rent it. It's literally like paying for a service. Mm-hmm. But it's like you were saying, Ethan, and you were saying too, D. It gets in people's mind because it affects them. Like, it's kind of not the perfect crime, but it's kind of perfect in a way, because it doesn't do, like, you don't, I can't phrase this. You do something that affects someone personally, but it's not too much, right? It's a big inconvenience to them, and they get mad about it, but you're not, you know, taking off an entire city's power grid and killing 3,000 people.
Yeah, that's not actually a violent crime or something.
Right. I mean, yeah, exactly.
It really depends. It depends on how on the system. Yeah, depends on how often it happens and how long it happens, right?
Oh, so sure.
Take Reddit down for a day. How much money do they lose?
Oh, millions, 100%.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm definitely not. I'm not. And you can absolutely denial of service important systems too. I just mean generally what we hear about are the non important ones, right?
Sure.
People get mad because you want to watch Netflix or you want to watch Twitch. But I don't know. It's an attention grabber, and I think mm-hmm. there's definitely corporate espionage that goes into it. But honestly, I think a lot of it is just people doing it, man, because they like doing it. They like having an impact on it, and it's trivial to do. So
that's why I say it's just a dick move. It's like, look, you're not stopping anything. You're not really hurting anything like permanently. You're just pissing us off. So I guess that's reason enough for some people, like you said, but it's just, God, please stop this shit. It's so annoying.
Some men just want to watch the world slightly burn.
Slightly get toasty.
And then they put it out.
kind of warm to the touch. You know, if you put your hand above the world, it hurts a little.
Some assholes.
Some men just want to watch the world get a little bit warmer.
it's crazy though. So if you're looking for a job, as a public service announcement, you didn't ask for. If you like the computers, and if your grandpa and grandma says you're good at the computers, and you're looking for a job or a job change or whatever, anything cybersecurity related is a lot of money right now. Unfortunately, there's a lot of stupid people, because when things get popular, in my opinion, the quality kind of goes down. You're going to get really smart people, but you're also going to get a bunch of really stupid ones. So I think the overall quality in that field is down right now. But you can make a fuck ton of money. To me, it's almost like web dev was. I know web dev is still really popular, but in like the early 2010s, late 2000s, early 2010s, web development was you basically didn't have to know what you were doing, and you could make six figures. Everyone wanted one. And
well,
I think
what was that?
Web development, like front end web development.
Oh yeah.
Like I'm not saying that doesn't take skill, and there's you know, but it was the barrier to entry was so low, and the demand was so high that the people that were applying for the positions, they had all the bargaining power. And in a way, a lot of cybersecurity positions right now are the same way. Like you can almost name your price at a lot of companies, because companies are panicked, right? They're seeing this stuff happening. And their shareholders are mad, or their employees are mad, or whoever, their clients. And they're like, fuck, we have to do something about it. Go hire 38 new cybersecurity people. And so they go hire all these people. And when the job market's like this, it's like any other field. You have a lot of leverage. There are way too many positions. There's not enough people that want to do it. Even with the amount of people doing it, there are still more vacancies than there are people. It's nuts.
Supply and demand, baby.
Yeah.
Yep. And it will crash. I mean, it always does. Things go in cycles.
Yeah, it's all cyclical.
It's a bubble. Cybersecurity employment bubble.
Yeah.
I think so. I think there's already been some big breakthroughs. I mean, we've talked about Cloudflare. They're a big one. There's some, I think, AI, like the real kind, not the AI blockchain. But I think, I think AI and like advanced heuristics and stuff, like with malware, for example, that's getting so good that I think there will be products that you're never going to get rid of the need for it, but it's kind of like the cloud argument for sysadmins. I think there will be less need for people in some of these positions as technology continues to mature and get better. So I think that's what we're going to see happen with cybersecurity, because even if you hire a bunch of really good people, it's hard to combat. If you're like a three dude shop for XYZ, the XYZ company in Atlanta, it's kind of hard to combat the nation state of Israel, right?
Right. So, I mean, if they're knocking on your door, you got a problem. What have you done? How did you draw the ire of an entire country?
That's what's crazy to me. Like, I guess it kind of takes the technical edge off the conversation, but have you noticed we just kind of accept that this happens? The royal we, not us, but like countries. We're just okay with it. Like, you hear the news talk about it. You hear statements from our government leaders from a lot of countries. And they're like, yeah, this nation state over here, cyber stuff, and they just move on. They're like, oh, also my son graduated today. It's like they don't even fucking care. They just
go ahead, sorry.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
I can't remember what I was going to say. It's kind of like how we were talking. It's kind of like what we were talking about earlier, where it's, you know, it doesn't hurt anybody physically. Like, so everyone's like, it's annoying more than anything. Well, it's kind of the same thought process and reaction to it. It's like, they cyber attacked us and they got some information and, you know, who knows what will happen. Anyway, moving on. It's like, that's kind of important.
One day, it will be that important. Right now, you know, they mainly talk about things that, you know, like you guys have both suggested, it's going to directly affect you. Like, are you going to be able to, this isn't just an example, am I going to be able to go to the store and buy a loaf of bread? Right. So that's something that, you know, is affecting me directly and like right now. Can I put food on the table type thing, right? So this, the more and more that we get connected to technology, the more it is going to be affecting us directly.
You know, what if everything's tied? What if we're Minority Report style? Like you have like a visor that does everything. I know. I'm making shit up, but pretend you do.
Sure.
And someone denial of services, you're the company that your visor goes through. And now you can no longer call anyone, talk to anyone, order food, do anything, because everything routes through that system, and that system is now taken offline. So, to your point, it's gonna go from a nuisance to shit sucks.
Now that is so way far out in the future.
Oh yeah,
but
definitely.
But it's, you know, it's not that far.
It's not. Well, it's really not. It's like, your lifetime. It's your lifetime.
It'll you think so? Lifetime.
Yes.
I mean, I live in a 100%. Rural area, and it's, you know, coming. I don't know if it'll happen in my lifetime.
Coming to a theater near you. I mean, it goes back to all the, you know, this is what I was about to say, was this is why cash and physical coin is so important. This is also why they hate physical cash and coin. They hate it.
Okay. I see where you're going. Okay.
Yeah.
I do agree with that.
Because if they can cut money off, if they can cut off your access to money or your ability. Yeah. Yeah. We got you.
Unless you're a farmer.
If some illegal, you know, some nation state wants to war on the other one, they just bring down your finance system. And, you know, there's that already. There's that threat already. You know, there's attacks on NASDAQ and all that shit at New York Stock Exchange all the time. You know, that shit happens on the reg.
But I don't hear about it as much. Now, I did hear about the Equifax stuff that happened.
Yeah, the breach a couple years ago. I think if you worked for those companies, I think like if you were like the director of security at Bank of America or the stock exchange, you would shit yourself on the daily probably. Like that.
Probably.
So there's, it's not that attacks work. It's that they're constantly happening. Like a lot of them fail because you do have smart people and you have a lot of stupid people attacking you. So that's the other thing too. I think I already said this. So if I'm repeating myself, I'm sorry. A lot of people doing these attacks are dumb. They are fucking stupid. They're just trying to do something to make money or to play around. So, you know, that's not hard to defend yourself against, which that's good. I'm glad there's a lot of stupid ones, but it's still, you have this like almost like a signal to noise ratio, and you're constantly being attacked and doing what you can to mitigate it. And in a way that's dangerous too, because you can become complacent.
Yeah.
And like, if you're a big target, like, you know, NASDAQ, I don't know this for sure. I don't work there, but let's pretend I'm sure they are. So let's, you know, they're constantly being like pen tested, or they constantly have threats of malware. And it's hard to keep your edge when you see 1,000 things happen a day and 1,000 things don't work. So you're batting 100 or you're batting 1,000%, right? You're perfect. Yeah. And it's hard to keep your edge when you don't ever have something fail that you have to learn from. And then when it does happen, you're fucked. You're like, well, cat's out of the bag now. sorry, stock market's down.
Whoopsie doodle. We'll just shut it down until we get this sorted out, and then billions lost.
Could you imagine?
That's the big thing. No, I don't want to. I mean, that's complacency is what's, and I think it's because, you know, we all do things kind of related to the information technology field. But I think having the view I have from the inside, complacency is what scares me the most, because I've literally been complacent myself and I've seen it happen to peers. And my world is small scale compared to the people we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it fucking happens. And that should scare people. That maybe not, I don't want to, it's not about inducing fear. It should make you want people to be good. It should make you want to hold these people accountable to do their job and to hold the government accountable to do its job to protect itself and our infrastructure. Because I promise you that the fucking people in the government right now, and it's not about political party. It literally does not matter who's in the office, that there are so many people in that office that are complacent as shit.
Oh yeah.
Because they don't understand technology. There's still that boomer mindset, in my opinion, across the board of, well, I don't know, it's these ones and zeros. It's
like, okay, fucking nerd.
That was funny 30 years ago. You can't act like that anymore. This shit's too important now.
Do you think that the lack of information coming from, you know, like your main media sources, you know, I understand that not everybody, you know, watches MSNBC and all that shit, but a lot of people do. Do you think that there's still like a gap in knowledge about, you know, talking about the boomers, do you think that there's still a gap in knowledge or a gap in understanding about technology as it is now? And so that's why they don't report it out, because people don't understand and then can't relate. And I'm not trying to say people are stupid or people are dumb, but
okay. I'll say that.
All right. You'll say that. And I'm going to say that they're fucking retarded. Uninformed.
I mean, I think it's both, right? I think you're right. A 100%. They don't report it because their viewers don't want to hear it. Right. So they're not going to report something that causes them to lose viewership. That doesn't make sense to them financially. Exactly. I do think, and it annoys me, I think there's plenty of stupid people, but I think there's this, you know, because of the age they are, this age gap mindset of self-deprecation, of truly thinking they can't understand it. And that's not true. Like, so many people think that so much of this shit is magic. And I'm not saying everyone can understand everything. That doesn't work like that. Yet there's a finite number of hours in the day. And if you're already 78 years old and you have never cared about any of this, chances are you have a lot of catching up to do.
If I'm 78 years old, I am not going to give a fuck.
But my point is, like, they can learn. And I think people feed into that and tell them they can't, and they think they can't. And so it's treated like a joke. Like, it's like, oh, I don't even know how to use my phone. My great-grandson, he does the Facebooks. It's like, okay, I get it. It doesn't have to be something you enjoy or be your hobby. But you can learn about it, and you can be more educated if you want to be. You just don't want to be. It's not that you're not smart enough to do it.
You touched on something so good just then. And it's still something that I experience in my day-to-day at work. And I'm sure you guys do too. And it's people with that mindset. You know, even people that work in a, you know, technology-related organization, they still, you know, act that way about things. You know, I don't know how many times I've heard, well, you know, Ethan, you work your magic. And I'm like, well, it's not magic, guys. It's
okay, guys.
It's pretty easy.
And they'll be like fluid or, you know, fluid engineers or some shit. They'll have some equally crazy field they're in that is very technical and, you know, takes a long time to pick it up and really deep dive it. But they'll look at IT and technology like that, the normal stuff they use every day, like it's just, oh, it's too much.
Yeah, it's great.
So what do you mean? It's in a corollary, I guess, to it is like people who, and it still blows my mind, they've driven cars for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, and they have no idea how that fucking thing works. No idea.
Yep.
They couldn't, if you tell them, you know, it's low and old. Well, why does that matter? Okay. Well, Jesus.
I mean, I'm guilty of that to a degree, not to the low on. I know what I mean. I understand how to take care of a car, but I mean, Dee and I have had conversations where I'm like, this is so fucking cool. I don't even know how this works. Like, I couldn't do that. And he's like, no, it's not that fucking hard. And he explains it, and I'm like, oh, okay, that actually makes sense.
Yeah, it's not hard.
It's inexperience, and that's okay. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying you should ever look down on someone for an experience. What's unacceptable to me is when people perpetuate that thing that you hear from the media too, of like, if you're over a certain age or under a certain age, you can't do XYZ, or you shouldn't learn XYZ. And I'm like, no, go fuck yourself. Yeah. And they're like, oh, you're 28, you shouldn't do this and this, or you're 78, you shouldn't. No, fuck off. Yeah. If people want to learn something, I think people should always be learning things because I think it helps you. But, you know, that's just my opinion. But if you want to learn something, then fucking do it. Your age is irrelevant. Unless there's a physical barrier. Like, again, there are some, if you're 94 years old, you're probably not going to climb Mount Everest alone. But there are a lot of mental things. I mean, just apply yourself.
Yeah. How do you maintain your curiosity throughout your lifetime?
Honestly, that's a good question.
I don't know. So I haven't had that drop off yet. I'm still young, and I'm not saying it's not going to happen. But there's always been a thing that I just want to know things. And I know it's cliche because I can't explain it better. Maybe that's a shortcoming of mine. But it makes me happy, like an actual feeling of happiness to learn something new, or to do good at something, or to improve a skill in something. I'm like, this makes me feel good. I'm happy, and I want to keep doing that.
That's why we're scientists.
I guess.
Yeah.
Where's my lab coat? Is my lab coat in the mail? Did you send it this time?
Computer scientists.
I guess.
There you go.
That's what the degree is, but I'm not.
That's what it says
scientist.
On the paper, bitch. I'm a fucking scientist. So,
but I think we have to tell people. It's kind of happened because nerd's not a funny word. People still joke about it, but it's very accepted now compared to 20 or 30 years ago. And being in a field like we're in, or doing cool things with any kind of branch of science, is not looked down on. It's celebrated.
Right.
But how do we keep getting people interested? And, you know, you have to, in my opinion, the hard thing to do, especially with our field or my field, I'm just picking on myself, is to not, you don't want to be an elitist. You want to always welcome people. And if people ask you questions, you want to try and tell them. But you also have to understand that not everyone can do the job immediately, or maybe not everyone wants to put in the effort. So you don't want to be an elitist, but you also don't want to tell someone, oh yeah, you're doing great, you can do anything I can do, because that's not true. Someone can't come in and do everything you can do if you have a decade of experience. So it's that to me, I have a problem with it. It's that fine line. I don't want to come off as elitist or ruin their curiosity, because I want them to learn, but I'm not going to sit there and tell them how great they're doing. You know, I'm going to tell them when they're wrong. Be like, no, you did that wrong, but here's why. And, you know, it's okay. You're new. You know, try this next time. Like, how do you do that on a grand scale, like a countrywide scale?
That's what, you know, believe it or not, that's kind of one of those things like education is the DOE is supposed to be doing. And it falls under recruiting, right? Recruiting people into these fields who are good fits. They want to do it. So on and so forth. That's kind of one of their things, like one of their chartered things they're supposed to be handling. But yeah, you see how that went.
They're more worried about teaching people how to not be racist.
That is the number one problem in our society today.
Clearly.
Well, you wouldn't have got a denial of service.
Everywhere. I'm on the way to work.
You wouldn't have got a denial of service attack if you weren't so fucking racist.
Right. If you just read that CRT chapter, then your servers wouldn't have gone down.
Hey, I don't mean to take myself on a tangent, but fuck, man. But yeah,
it is some wild shit.
I don't know. I feel you, dude. I'm right there with you. I have the same beliefs. What do you want to do? People need to be educated, because like, I mean, it's the future.
Right? I think it falls on us, this the public at large, to you know, mentor younger generations and, you know, look for these people and, you know, if we find them, encourage them to pursue it. Don't think it's something stupid that you can't do, you know, and it doesn't matter, boy, girl, whatever. It's irrelevant. Just, you know, look for those. I mean, you know what to look for. If you've been in this field, if you've been in IT for as, you know, long as we have, I know what to look for almost. I can tell you if somebody, not with 100% accuracy, mind you, but I, you know, I can gauge somebody's interest in something and whether or not they're a good fit for it. So it's, you know, find these people and encourage them. Because
I can look at somebody. Way. I can look at somebody and tell you if they're an IT or not.
I can smell someone's hair and put them and tell them in what field they should be in. Take a big old Biden approved sniff and tell you what they're supposed to do.
I'm the people that the DOE is targeting.
Shit. Good Lord.
But I think it will come down to, like you said, the public. I agree with, you know, I agree with what you're saying. I think it kind of has to, unfortunately, at least as, if nothing else, you know, bridge the gap and find people that are interested and keep them interested. I feel like that's an issue. And it kind of plays into what I was saying about, you know, don't be elitist, but don't coddle someone. Like it's such a common thing, and it's not the kids these days. It's always been a thing. But it's such a common thing with some people that they learn something, that they spend an hour looking at something and they think they're an expert and they just quit. They're like, well, I've conquered this subject, on to the next one.
Dunning-Kruger, like, in full effect.
Right, exactly. And so you have to be like, well, no, you're not even fucking close. You're stupid. Now, if someone just wants to read something, you should, there is no requirement to everything you look at, you must become a PhD in. But if you're going to pursue it as a job, or if you're going to pursue it seriously, then you kind of have to be reality checked. You know, if you have that approach, someone should sit you down and be like, look, I know you think you're fucking, you know, God or Beelzebub or Moloch's gift to this planet, but you've only done this job for, you know, 3 weeks and you're nowhere close. Keep learning. I think you're doing great, but let's fucking take a peg or two off that elitism chip you got on your shoulder. Yeah. And I know that happens in other fields too. I'm sure in the trades fields, you know, you hear stories about, like, I don't know, welding or carpentry or anything. Right. You got these people that have done it for a while. Someone new comes in, thinks they're amazing.
Hot shit.
Right. Yeah.
See, that brings up a point for me though. And it's something I struggle with in our field right now to kind of critique it a little bit. What I struggle with is just fatigue from new, right? There's always a new technology, a new platform, a new language, a new, it's always on and on. And it's like, and, you know, I don't know carpentry or welding, but I don't think it's changed that much in the past year, right?
No, probably not.
God, IT changes. It's like it's a whole new world every 6 months. It feels like almost.
It changed before you finished that sentence.
Right.
A new JavaScript library just came out as we're talking in this podcast, and it's already been adopted by every company on the planet.
And if you don't know it, you're fired.
Right. Yeah. That's the fatigue I struggle with. It's just like, man, and that's what makes me, going back to losing interest. That's what makes me lose interest, because it's so much, so fast. You have to drink from a fire hose every day, almost, it feels like.
Yeah.
And it's just, ugh.
That is a good point. And that is the reality.
I think that goes back to the signal to noise ratio thing. And I think it comes with experience that you have to just ignore it. And you have to, what you have to, well, ignore, do, yeah. it select, ignore it selectively, I'll say. Because one of the things that, what in my opinion, what separates you from being good or even really good to being fucking amazing is you can see all these new things and you have the ability to kind of triage them and say, like, okay, this is serious, or I think this is going to be serious and I need to spend some time on it. Right. Whereas these other 10 things, maybe they'll be around for a month, 6 months, but I don't need to worry about it. And you're going to make mistakes and you're probably going to be like, oh shit, I should have looked at this platform instead of this one. Yes. Fuck.
Yes.
But it's, that comes, you know, with aptitude and experience. You have to be able to filter and tune in the signal to noise ratio and not get overwhelmed, because you can't look at all of them. And if you do, you'll be an expert in none of them. You'll barely understand any of them, in my opinion, and your overall career and your abilities, or I don't know, whatever you say, they'll all suffer.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Your resume is going to have, you know, your technical abilities. You'll have like 800 different applications that you've logged into.
That's once. A bunch of shit you've heard of, but nothing you've done.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's almost a whole other podcast, just fucking talking about filtering out resumes and people, because it's I have a personal issue with a lot of how tech interviews are done. It's changing somewhat, but like the people, I know it's really common with development interviews, which again I don't do, but it's common in my specific field as well, where like they'll expect you to recall like a command with like 9 specific switches from memory. And I'm like, yeah, that's a cool parlor trick, but you literally have built-in documentation everywhere you do my job. So you do not need to remember any of that. You don't. You need to know what the command is. And what I would rather they do is do more open-ended questions about why you should use it, where it applies. Because that tests if someone knows something. Like asking them to regurgitate a fact is like, okay, they knew the interview was happening and they Googled it 10 minutes before the interview and they remembered it. But seeing as how that information is all freely available at your fingertips, what does that prove? Right. Like, it's like the school issue with, you know, memorizing things and spitting them on a test and then you don't remember them a week later. It's much more important, in my opinion, to be able to understand why you should use something and how the pieces fit together. Because if you know all that, you're also going to know you can find the switches at your fingertips and you're going to know how to use it. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
That is the true weed out. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. That's what they need to do.
And I, not to brag about my teachers, but I think that's what I loved about my main computer science teacher. Was she said it then, but I didn't understand it until I got older and in the industry. But she would say, I'm not teaching you languages and systems. I'm teaching you how to learn about languages and systems. That's what I'm teaching you. And, you know, that's been the difference, I think. It's learning how to learn these things.
Nobody's bragging.
Yeah. Sorry. Bragging. She was awesome.
Gosh.
Shout outs.
Shout out former college teacher in Beelzebub. Shout out Beelzebub. Shout out. Had a shout out to him.
Oh, she was hard as nails, man. I loved her, though. It's like a drill sergeant. You hate him when you get there. You know, you love him when you leave.
Yep. Yes. This was good. So, just for everybody, Log4j is being fixed.
Yeah, patch your shit. Yeah. If you're somehow listening to this and you're a lazy admin, don't be a fucking idiot.
Patch your fucking shit. But yeah. Yeah, I guess that's it, guys.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Take care. That was fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Good night.
Night.